and somewhat he is granted forgiveness, partial forgiveness.
This is the part I don't understand. If he's as good as dead, that assumes that everybody knows him, right?
At where do I do mute? Well, just for a second.
It's my shoe.
So if God marks him, doesn't that make him stand out among everybody that he did this terrible thing?
So let's consider the entire population of the earth at that point.
Okay.
So you had his mother, his father, him. I think we got them all. Right. So the argument is that clearly the entire world knows what happened.
Okay. Let's say that's true.
Okay. Right.
Everybody knows.
Right. Everybody knows. Both of them. Right. It's like that famous book, you know, famous Jewish sports stars, both of them. You know, so obviously, at this point, his parents aren't going to kill him over it.
Right.
But there'll be more generations coming.
Right.
And therefore, the argument, and also remember, there are animals out there.
Okay.
And the animals, again, at this point in history, we don't fear animals. But again, if somebody, that's only because we're on a certain spiritual level, you're lowered to a lower spiritual level. You don't have that protection from the animals. So this is what's relevant to us. Again, we're not discussing Bereshis now, but what is relevant to us is you see from here, right from creation, pretty much, the power of tefillah. That here, that the world's first murderer, to a certain extent, got away with murder because of this. The Sefer Yikarim, I'm not going to do it inside, but we'll just mention it outside, asks the most basic question. The Sefer Yikarim says as follows. He said, a lot of people don't want to pray because they actually have a pretty good argument. Right? I'm going to say it in my words more, and that is a person goes out, right, and I go through life, and I believe that God is good. Not a very controversial opinion, I don't think. And therefore, whatever I deserve, I get. Right? So, for example, if I was fabulously wealthy, and all of a sudden I don't deserve that because, let's say, I'm not being charitable with my giving, I'm squandering my money, right? Right? This my money is somehow hurting me, right? This now I find myself at the dispensary every day. Whatever the issue might be with the fact that I have too much money, God makes a decision that it would be in my best interest not to have money, right? It would be better for me. If I didn't have money, I wouldn't be responsible for giving charity. And now, so therefore, if I wouldn't give charity, it wouldn't hurt me. Or for another thing, if I didn't have money, right, I wouldn't be going, right, to Rabbi Braunschweigel. In NYU, he used to be a rabbi in NYU, worked someplace else afterwards. So he used to say, tzedakah tatzil me movies. If you give me tzedakah, you won't have anything left to go to the movies anymore. That's what it means. Right? So the idea being that God makes a decision, and God, understanding the bigger picture than I understand, says that, in fact, my existence as this, whether I understand or not, is better for me. So why am I going to pray to do something otherwise? And even if I would pray, right, why would God listen to me? What's right? Obviously, any argument that I have, God considered beforehand. So what is the sake of prayer? What am I going to tell God? Well, you know, if I was a lawyer, hypothetically, I was going before a judge and I want to defend my client, I'll say, perhaps you haven't considered the following, right? Maybe you didn't look at things this way. Or maybe I'll argue there's a piece of information you're missing. There's no piece of information that God's missing. There's nothing that he didn't consider. So what does it mean that we are, in fact, praying for something? How are we going to change God's mind? That is the most basic question of the Sefer Yikarim. Basically, why pray? Why pray? There's nothing that I can tell God that he didn't know beforehand. So he makes the following basic statement, which is a very important statement, and in fact, it is a statement that many people build on. His statement is, you're never going to change God. That's one of the 13 basic principles of faith. God is perfect. You can't change him. But you know what I can change? I can change me. He gives a mushel here. He says that, let's say, a king announces that, you know, from now on, all lefties are going to be thrown in jail. Right? We know that they're all sinister. We're going to get rid of the lefties. Right? I could, at that point, if I was a lefty, I could tie my left hand and learn how to use my right arm. Right? I could make myself a righty. So what would I have accomplished by that? I didn't change the law. I changed me. I no longer have a problem with that anymore. So he said, that's what tefillah is. What prayer is, prayer is a form of introspection under which I change myself. Going back to the case that I spoke about earlier, the person who is misusing their money, now all of a sudden I've gone from wealth to poverty. So now I say, wait a second, poverty stinks. And if poverty stinks, I should really try to wipe it out. Now, if I ever get past this, ever get back to where I was, I never realized how bad this was. Right? I need a handout. If someone helps me, I'm going to help the other person. Considering my plight and my needs will make me the better person who no longer deserves this. So that's what the Sefer Ikarim develops, this idea. That in fact, tefillah is a form of tshuva. Tefillah is the opportunity that we have three times a day to sit down and consider our place in the world. As we announce how great God is and how small we are. And as we focus on what's really important, right? What am I praying for? I'm praying for health. I'm praying for that I should have a livelihood. I'm praying that Yerushalayim should be rebuilt. I'm praying that all the Jews that are sent in exile should all come back together again. That is supposed to refocus me on what is actually important in life, make me a better person, and therefore more deserving of that which I needed. Yes, it wouldn't make sense for God to change things before I davened, but now that I have davened, it's a different me that's walking out. This idea is developed and tweaked by many of the earlier and later philosophers. Looking at the Kuzari, at number 8, he said, Tia Esahir Alev Zimano Pirio, Vishar Itosav Kidrachim Magim Al Esahir, Visabe Krovaso Shabo Mestame Bruchanim Vishrachim Hebehavim, Vipriyomo Valero Shosh Itosahim Roshel Tfila. He gives the following example. So nowadays, we eat three meals a day. I get up in the morning. I need physical sustenance to make it through the day. I eat my Wheaties, right? My Wheaties last me until lunchtime. At lunchtime, I'm hungry again. I have my tuna fish sandwich, right? That gets me until the evening. And in the evening, again, I sit down to eat, and I have my dinner. And then I have shawarma after that, right? That a person needs three meals a day for physical sustenance, what? So too, a person needs three meals a day for spiritual sustenance. I get up in the morning, I need to connect with God, I daven shacharis. That lasts me until the afternoon, I need a recharge, I daven mincha. Then, in the evening, I daven maariv. So the idea is that in life is busy, life I lose focus. So what prayer does is it refocuses me on the spirituality and on God and what I should really be doing, right? I go to the office, you know, I'm involved in wheeling and dealing, right? I don't necessarily realize that I get caught up in the moment. I get reminded, there's a reason why you're doing this. You're doing this to support a family. You're doing this in order to help out people. You're doing this, there's reasons for this, to make the world a better place. That is what tefillah is, according to the Kuzari. And it's your opportunity during the day, just like we physically have to fill up the tank from a few times a day, we spiritually have to fill up the tank as well. Rav Kook, number 9, says, Oneg shel tefila. Ein tefila chafza v'shano shum dover belokos. So before you sit down to daven, you have to think about, what am I doing here? So he makes the comment I said earlier, prayer is not going to change God. God is perfection. God is eternal. God, there is no room for change. Right? Any change in God would be for a negative, so therefore he doesn't change. Rather, I have to go and I have to reconnect myself to my soul. So I'm talking as if I'm talking to a king who has the ability to change things. It's as if I'm talking to like a father who is willing to help me out, like a person who is righteous and is generous, who is willing to give me a handout. Once I realize what I'm doing here, once I realize my connection to God, once I realize that who I should be, right here I am, I have this special relationship to God, that's going to make me a better person, and the tefillah is going to work. Rav Hirsch in Chorev has a very interesting comment. He said, what does the word tefillah mean? What is the root? Right, mean that, correct. In that case, it means that hazinu. Right, what's in hazinu? Va'oyvenu pririm. Right, what's the word pririm mean? Ki lo kutzureinu tzuram ve'oyvenu pririm. I think that's the pasuk. Yes, Avi? Right, there we go. What? They're judging, correct. So he says that tefillah comes the words from the word lifalel. It means that a person has to sit there and judge themselves. Tefillah is the Shimon Esrei, you're sitting there quietly and you take the opportunity to see, have I been living up to what I should be living up to? Right? A person has to go and personally judge themselves and say, what is it about me that can use fixing? And as soon as I go and identify what can be fixed and I work on that, then of course, I'm a new man, I'm a new person, I am in fact at that point more worthy, and of course the outcome is going to be better. One last piece in this same vein, that is Rav Zvi Mecklenburg. Anybody know Rav Zvi Mecklenburg? I think he might be confused with Carl. Carl's grandfather, the great Carl grandfather, the orange crush defense. Correct. Benji, now we're talking. Charlene will explain it afterwards. Right. Also, in the off season. Right, it's very interesting, right? This is not in the Ksava Kabbalah. I put in the parentheses that he was the Baal Ksava Kabbalah. He said, what does it mean that prayer is avoda shebelev? Right? The work of the heart. What avoda is involved? So he says, very interesting. He said, avoda slev kavoda sada. Working your heart is like working in the fields. If I want to prepare the field, first I got to get rid of the garbage, right? The thorns got to go. The rocks have to go. The first thing I have to do if I'm going to go and plant the field is I have to clear out what doesn't belong there. right? Terapet tsroros aforot hiporet migrafosa v'chachvos charosh bolev machshavos. Own ata b'tfilah. Yesh b'yotah kli kodeh rachosh bo. Just like then, first I have to clear out everything, and then I can begin to plow into the ground, so too, when I am praying, first I have to remove from my heart any thoughts that are detrimental, and then I can dig deep into my heart. Once I've removed all the negative, then I can positively think about God, right? The fact that I should fear God, Ravaso, and I love God. This isn't so easy. Even if at some point I remove the stones of Tava and the thorns of honor, and then I realize that that's all not important. What do I care about Kavod? It's hard to get rid of all of it. To say that I really don't care about kavod, I'm not desirous in any way. It's deep inside of you. Therefore, you have to constantly be plowing every single day. You got to get rid of it. And therefore, you're going to have to go and judge between the two ideas that are in your heart, right? Or what traditionally the ones that are on your shoulders. You got the one guy on the one shoulder that's red and has a tail and a pitchfork. And then you have the guy on the other shoulder, you know, the one with the wings and the halo, right? What you've got to do is you've got to sit down and say, who am I listening to? So he goes through this and he explains in great explanation that in fact tefillah is you've got to work on yourself like you work on a field. You have to remove that which is not necessary. You have to encourage, you have to plant in yourself the seeds of positive change. And then you have to encourage it. You have to water it. You have to prune it. You've got to keep on working at it. That's why we pray multiple times a day. We have to constantly be making sure that there's nothing that doesn't belong there. You got to get rid of the stones, the Asian beetles, whatever it might be in your heart. Right? And then, and at the same time, encouraging the growth of that which is spiritually important. What we've seen up until now are different takes on basically the same idea. And that is the idea of the Sefer Ikarim, that what you're doing in prayer is you're not working on God, you're working on yourself. That is what prayer is. And again, there's different ways of doing it, as we saw, but the bottom line is that the purpose of prayer, that at the end of the day, I am not the same person who started. And therefore, memela, we could say, I'm going to have a more positive outcome because I'm more deserving. Rav Chaim Volozhin basically rejects this entire line of thought. Rav Chaim Volozhin in the Nefesh HaChaim says, not so much. He says, when he talk about avoda, so the Ksava Kabbalah said, the avoda shebelev, tefillah is like the avoda shebesada. That's not really true. When we talk about avoda in the Torah, what are we usually talking about? Karbanos, right? We spoke about a few weeks ago, Neshalim and Parv Svasenu, that tefillah takes the part of not the avoda in the field, it takes the avoda in the Beis HaMikdash. The Nefesh HaChaim asks, how do karbanos work? I have sinned. I feel better what I did. So therefore an animal dies. Now it's all better. How did that work?
After
The animal is now in a better place. Right, okay. But that being the case, how come some animals I have to, you know, sprinkle the blood here, and other animals I sprinkle the blood there? And sometimes, right, it comes to me, you know, it's only going to work so long. You know what the answer is, he says? I don't know. You know why it works? Because God said so. We don't understand why. God said that in the offense that a person does something accidentally, right, you bring this type of carbon. And in the event you're not sure if you did it accidentally, you bring that type of carbon. Right? If you did it purposely, if it's this type of error, it's that type of carbon. Why? As we say in Latin, ich soll wissen. Right? I have no idea why that would be so. Right? He said, but this is what works. This is what that we were told to do. And therefore, we faithfully follow the word of God. And we, in fact, we bring the carbonos as necessary. Can we begin to theorize? Yeah, we can. And we do. And we should, right? To learn Tamei HaMitzvot. But at the end of the day, we really can't give a complete answer on this. Tefillah is the same thing. So you know how it works? Ech zol vissen. So that is the bottom line, he says. That the bottom line is there are words out there. These words, in fact, somehow or another, right? If the Anshe Knesset Gedolah says, if you say these words on a regular basis, this will make things better. Just like if you sacrifice this animal, that will make things better. Do we understand it? We don't understand it. But it works.
And we don't have an explanation.
Right. That's what he says. He's basically taking a very different tact than the approach that we've seen up to is that it has to be logical. It has to be logical, it has to spell out. And in fact, there's different explanations. He says, why does it have to be logical? Who says it has to be logical? The carbonos weren't logical. This is stepping in for carbonos. This isn't logical either. Anyone have any opinions which one they like better? You like the first one. Jenny likes the second one. Why do you like the second one? I like the second one for a different reason. It's a lot easier. Right? The bottom line is it's just a lot easier to be able to just say, again, that this idea that tefillah only works if I change myself through it. You know what? 6:30 this morning, shacharis. I couldn't get up and take a shavua in front of the Aron saying I concentrated in a way that I came out a better person.
You're just not there yet.
It's 6:30
in the morning.
For sure not there at
6:30. It's all magical. That's exactly
where I'm going. Oh, come on. She's being honored. How do you take a question? Come on. Out of all the times to take Helen's question. Right. So, yeah, the obviously, there is greater value. If I bring a carbon, right, and I do smicha on it, and I say I hereby, you know, do a strong vidoy, it's going to be worth more than a regular carbon. That there's undoubtedly value. Again, if I'm going to keep up with the parallelism between the avodas hakarbanos and the avodas hatfila, right, if I'm going to say if they're going to remain parallel to one another, then yeah, there still is this value to kavana. But there's also value without kavana. That's the difference, right? Kavana adds, but according to the first approach, I might say, you know what? If you're not going to do it right, don't bother. And what the second approach is saying is no, bother.
Because
there is value to the words. There is value. It has intrinsic value. Yes, you get to ask a question. Okay. We don't have the exact words, but we do have, even according to the Rambam, we do have a certain misgeret, as they would say in Israel, right? There is a certain approach that you need to have first shevach, then bakasha, then hodah. That's A. And B, even if it's not the oraisa, the anshe knesses hagadola were kind enough to give us an exact game plan. Right? And that's what he said that they did, that there was a time where people were on a higher level. They were able to figure it out themselves, right? That kind of disappeared around 2 millennia ago. And therefore, at this point, we have a handbook how to do it. Yes. Well, no, I would be happy if everybody got along also, but I think that the first approach, one really has to wonder, is there any value to davening if you're in fact not changing yourself? And in the second approach, you're clearly saying that yes, there undoubtedly is value to it. There'd be more value if you were doing a better job at it. Don't get me wrong. Right? I'm not speaking here against Kavana. Some of my best friends have Kavana. Right? Yes. I would imagine that he would say that it undoubtedly has great value as well. For the second approach, even. So it's radically different, I think, than the first approach, right? Is it saying that no, the words themselves. And yes, there isn't any great logic behind it. Yeah, you've got a lot of good questions on this. But you know what? It doesn't matter. This second approach is supported somewhat by the idea that we have throughout the Torah and beyond of the tefillah of a tzaddik. Right? Let's take an example here. Let's go to the Egel Hazav. In the case of the Egel Hazav, the golden calf, right, the people sinned, Moshe davened on their behalf. Now, according to the first approach, how would that possibly work? Not at all.
Right, the people are Moshe.
You can't do tshuva for somebody else. Right. Just not a possibility. Right? And in fact, the question could be asked of, you don't have to be Moshe Rabbeinu, you can ask it on us. What does a Mishabech L'Cholom ever do? Right? I'm praying for you. That's what it ends up being.
We're remembering. We're keeping somebody in mind. We're hoping for their...
But how does that work?
We're speaking to God about...
If you tell me that the way prayer works is I'm not changing God, I can only change myself, right? Then myself isn't praying.
So after Moshe Rabbeinu comes down unexpectedly, and he breaks the lucha, but you don't think the nation was remorseful? You don't think it said, uh-oh, I think we goofed. We expected him yesterday because of what Trump did. There was some remorse on theirs. There was some change on their part. Moshe begs the Kosh Baruch Hu to forgive them. He actually...
But again, if the remorse is the reason for the forgiveness, that should have worked without Moshe. What's Moshe bringing to the table? Kiviyachol, if there was a table.
Sort of a big thing that he does.
It is. As things go, it's a big one.
Right. So it's sort of like, well, how can you say they can't know if something big had they've just gone on doing what they were doing with the golden calf.
Right, no, but the question that Alex is asking is when Moshe shows up, boy, that was an unpleasant surprise for them.
Right.
And they said, uh-oh, we probably shouldn't have done this camp
there. There was some change in them.
We messed up.
And then took Moshe to send a painting on the
temple. Well, how did that work? Again, the change either should have been enough that you didn't need Moshe, or if it wasn't enough, even Moshe shouldn't have helped. Yes, Helen.
For them, but he was God should forgive the Jewish people because that's what he wanted.
So that's an interesting approach, right? The argument is that if, God forbid, somebody I am close to passes away, I am affected by that. So therefore, I can go to God and say, please don't let that happen for my sake, right? That you know, even whether the person deserves it or not, you know, that's not for me to say, but I can tell you that I will be very negatively affected by this. Right? That is a very good point. I think it's a very strong point. I don't know if that works when the gabbai reads off a name from a list of Mishaberachs and he really has no idea who they are. I mean, Mishaberach lists are notorious. You know, people who are on the list have, thank God, gotten better. Some of them, unfortunately, have died. But they just stay on the list. They stay on the list for an inordinate amount of time. So again, that's according to your approach, right? But that would work for Moshe somewhat. Moshe would say, "Yeah, they deserve, but I didn't do it. I was up with you. You know, I was being a good boy for the last 40 days. I'm really, really hungry now, and you know, and therefore, you know, for my sake." That's the same case, in fact. Yeah. It's so similar.
The other thing that kind of strengthens that argument is we know that by davening for others, we really ourselves are answered. If you need a specific bakasha and you find a friend who needs it, you daven for his
sake. Who nene tchilo?
Well, or maybe even before.
Right. Who nene tchilo?
So this explains why Moshe was davening on behalf of them as well as on behalf of himself.
Mm-hmm. So let's take a look at number 14. The Gemara has you can look at this Gemara in different ways, right? It can be looked at as a very cruel Gemara. The Gemara Yevama says, Amar Reb Yitzchak b'bnei Mahayu Avosenu Akurim. Why do we find that there were such fertility problems among the avos, the mahos, right? Vivnesha kosh bachu misavet tfilasim shel tzadikim, because God likes when righteous people pray. That's why I would try. That's why I try to be, not to be righteous. Just, you know, just playing it safe. It's a little bit of an oddity, but if you consider it, not as much. Said, why are the tefillas, the prayers of the tzaddikim, like a pitchfork? Just like a pitchfork moves the hay from one place to another. So too, when a tzaddik prays, it changes God's outlook. Correct, right? This is according to, and all Udi Ime, right? There is definitely seems to be here an idea that somehow Tfila does affect, right? So this, even though logically we were so comfortable with the first approach, if you look at these sources, right, it seems to be different. Let's look at another one. Next Gemara, Moed Katan. So it says in Shmuel Beis, we might learn Shmuel Beis one day, okay, Yisrael, read the Tvar Tzur Yisrael Moshe Ba'adam Tzadik Moshe Yiras Elokim. What does that pasuk mean? Amar Rabbi Avo Achikomar. Amar okay Yisrael. Read the Tvar Tzur Yisrael. Ani Moshe Ba'adam. Said, God says, I am the rock. I am in charge of people. Me, Moshe be? Who's in charge of me? Tzadik. Shani Gozer Gezerah. Umavatla, I say we're going to do this way, and the tzaddik says no. The tzaddik has the ability to change God's mind.
Not just the tzaddik. We say that everybody who gives tzedakah and tefillah, you know,
Maviren is Roa Gezera, let's say hypothetically. But that I could comfortably explain using the first approach. Yeah, because I've done mitzvahs. Now I'm not going to be punished.
Introspective and right.
That fits well. Okay. Number 16, the Gemara I give you is Gemara in Tainus that tells the story of Choni Hamagel. If you're not familiar with the story of Choni Hamagel, Choni Hamagel at one point he was a simple man. He worked in the fields, but he was actually privately a very, very holy person. And there was a terrible drought. And this Choni Hamagel, they asked him, they got him to pray on behalf of them for the rain. And what did he do? Girls, you know the story? He's called Choni Hamagel because he made a circle. And he plopped himself down in the circle and said,
I'm not leaving
God, so help me, I am not budging until you make it rain. And what happened?
It rained in the circle
and outside the circle. The squares and the triangles. The last line in the Gemara, it says, Shalcho Shimon ben Shattach. When this is all over, Shimon ben Shattach sent him a letter, sent him a message. He said, Ilmoli Choni Ata, if you weren't Choni, goes Rani Lecha Nidu. I would have excommunicated you for that shtick. That's how you talk to God? And the short answer is, yeah. So I could defend the first approach by saying that by most people it's like the first approach, but for some reason tzaddikim, right? All these cases, the Avos, Moshe Rabbeinu, every case I spoke, Choni Hamagel, every case that we spoke about, it's about somebody who is particularly righteous, a great tzaddik. That somehow the great tzaddikim, they get to break the rules. They have the ability to kivayachol change God. But as far as the rest of us go, right, that would probably be the approach. One last comment, the Ramban says, Kol tefilos David Malkeinu v'chol tefilos Ovid nisim v'niflaos. Said every tefillah that David wrote led to great, great miracles. Nisim v'nos ela she'ein b'hem Shinim or Forsim B'tivo Sha'olam. When it's Tzaddik Davins, the world changes. You just can't see it. So in shorts, the bottom line is there are two major approaches as to why we pray. One is because we want to make ourselves better people. We want to remain connected throughout the day spiritually. We want to constantly be considering what we have been doing and through that make ourselves better. And as we are better people, we will have better outcomes. The second approach is no, there is some spiritual, mystic value in prayer. And that mystic value, right, that in fact is what keeps us going. And we gave some points that while it's not as intellectually pleasing as the first approach, there definitely do seem to be some sources which would support that. And in fact, in many ways, on the days when we don't have the kavanah that we're, again, kavanah we should always try to have, but just to know on days when the kavanah is not necessarily all there, there still is value to our prayers. And with that, adios, claimants. Okay, how many people washed? I guess Joe will lead the benching. That would be appropriate. Well said, Joe.